We're On the Record. I'm Lisa Snowden, editor-in-chief of Baltimore Beat, in for Sheila Kahn. Good morning. There's a crowded ballot of hopefuls vying for the job of Baltimore City Mayor in the upcoming May 14th primary. That includes one unaffiliated contender, three Republicans, and 13 Democrats, of which Dhruv Vignaraja is one. Vignaraja is no stranger to campaigning. This is his second attempt at the mayoral seat. The first was in the 2020 primary. He also ran twice for city state's attorney in 2017 and in 2022. Vignaraja has served as federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Baltimore. He was chief of the Major Investigations Unit in the Baltimore State's Attorney's Office and served as Deputy Attorney General of Maryland. He is currently a managing partner in the Baltimore office of the national law firm Sanford Heisler Sharp. Welcome back to On the Record, Dhruv.
Great to be here.
What do you think is the most important issue in this election for mayor?
Look, I don't think there's any question that public safety dominates the conversation. The reality is that that unfortunately remains a defining challenge for Baltimore. Despite a reduction in homicides, people in Baltimore don't feel safe. But we also have to recognize that the root causes of that include deficits in public transit, major deficits in education. To pretend that we are not going to be talking about those issues is to blink the reality of Baltimore.
You first ran for mayor in 2020 and lost in the June primary. What makes this run different?
You know, there are two lessons that I've learned from running unsuccessfully here in Baltimore. One is, for an outsider to prevail in a mayor's race, you can't have a crowded field. You know, 4 years ago, there were 22 candidates, six major candidates. The change candidates, you know, the people that were running from the outside, even that lane was crowded. It was Mary Miller, T.J. Smith, and myself. Combined, we had more votes than Sheila or Brandon, but it's very difficult in the splintered field to break out. So part of it was just waiting to see what this field would look like and realizing that really it was just Brandon and Sheila. The second piece was that I committed early on to not allow my opponents or the media to define me. It's easy as a former federal prosecutor for someone to say, oh, he's just a law and order candidate, when we've pledged to make free buses citywide within 5 years, free college and trade schools for graduates of Baltimore City Public Schools. We're the only candidate that's pledged to block the construction of those luxury apartments at the Inner Harbor Park. Those are also critical issues. And I think part of what we've committed to is to making sure that the public has a clearer sense of who I am and what I represent. I think over the last couple of years, the people of Baltimore have gotten a sense of the fact that I fight for everyone. I fight for the little guy, against PG&E, for seniors that are losing homes in tax sales. And that was part of what I think is different, too.
Earlier this month, you held an event where families of homicide victims came together to endorse you. About the event, you said, quote, "Baltimore today remains a city in perpetual mourning." But murders in the city are down. Why should the city switch leaders when the statistics at the forefront of voters' minds is in a downward swing?
It's a great question. And the reality is, if the downward trend was something specific to Baltimore, I think it would make perfect sense for the mayor to be running on that. But actually, this is a downward trend nationwide. With the exception of Washington, D.C., every major urban setting has seen dramatic reductions in homicides. Detroit dropped the lowest numbers since 1966. Philadelphia, with a DA who styles himself as a Marilyn Mosby prosecutor, you know, Larry Krasner, is taking credit for the lowest murders in 30 years there. This is the Roosters taking credit for the dawn. And the truth is that it's not just Brandon who wants credit. Ivan Bates wants credit. Wes Moore wants credit. Joe Biden wants credit. Everybody wants to take credit for this reduction in violence across the nation. Unemployment is down as well. But those are national trends that have a lot more to do with the fact that we're a few years away from COVID. Put this in perspective, Lisa. Last year, Baltimore had the second highest murder rate in America, the worst mass shooting in Baltimore history. If the mayor really wants to call that a success, I fear that we have surrendered to this culture of low expectations. We got to do better than be along the same lines as the national trend line and pretend that that's success.
You mentioned Mayor Scott and also Ivan Bates, two folks who are at the opposite end, I think, of the spectrum of the approach to fighting crime. What would you do differently to address violent crime in Baltimore?
Yeah, look, I think the devil is in the details. I think this philosophy difference between Ivan and Brandon is reflected in how they approach the politics of it. But the reality is that everybody should agree that we need to get violent repeat offenders off the streets. Everybody should agree that the violent drug organizations, the rise in carjackings is something that we have to step into. What I would do is be very detailed about the kinds of things that have worked. When we got murders below 200 when I was chief of major investigations, it was not because of a return to mass incarceration or zero tolerance. In fact, there were fewer arrests that year than any year in the past, but it was because we were going after the violent organizations in Cherry Hill and Greenmount East. We also were trying to make it clear that people that needed support and services were going to get a chance to get those support and services. I think we all say the same thing too often. But if you look at the approach to carjackings, is there anything different that Baltimore is doing today under Ivan Bates or Brandon Scott? I'm not sure there is. What I would do is make sure every carjacking is referred to federal authorities. Not every robbery, not every homicide is subject to federal jurisdiction, but every carjacking is. I would do something that State Farm Insurance would love, which is to offer GPS tracking devices for every resident of Baltimore City. Your insurance premiums would go down. We could also develop bigger, stronger cases against the crews that are committing these crimes. When it comes to juvenile crime, I don't think it's good enough to say we're going to pass new laws and throw the book at these young people, or that we're going to give them support and services and that's enough. What I actually want to do is have a 30, 45-day evaluative period so we can identify the deficits that face these young people that are committing carjackings and robberies and gun crimes and determine whether they are a longstanding member of a gang that needs to be taught that there are consequences for their crimes, or whether they are somebody facing the traumas and mental health challenges and addiction challenges at home, that they face public transit deficits and they're not going to school. And in that circumstance, make sure that we are addressing those concerns. Nobody is talking about the difficult task of sorting through which juveniles fall into which category. Right now, we just put our finger in the air and hope that we're guessing right. And that doesn't serve the community well, and it certainly doesn't serve these young people well either.
This is On the Record. I'm Lisa Snowden, speaking with Dhruv Vignaraja, a Democrat running for nomination to become mayor of Baltimore City in the upcoming primary election, May 14th. Early voting begins this Thursday. Between 2010 and 2022, the number of people living in Baltimore City shrank by 8.2%, more than 50,000 people. Why do you think that people are leaving, and what would you do to help the city reverse that trend?
Lisa, let's put this in context. It's not just the last 10 or 12 years. In the past 25 years, we've lost nearly 25% of our population. We're the only city in America that today, in 2024, is smaller than we were in 1924 and still declining in population. And the reasons are, I fear, too obvious. You've got high crime, broken schools, and high property taxes. And if you expect families to pay twice as much in taxes as they do in neighboring jurisdictions for some of the worst public schools in the region and the highest crime rates in the nation, people are going to wake up and realize that that doesn't work. Here's what no one is talking about. That population decline is not even across the city. The reality is that what people refer to as the proverbial white L, it's actually gaining population. It's gaining property values. It's gaining average incomes. It is the black butterfly that is hemorrhaging people out of the county. And that is terrible news because it's middle and upper middle class black families that have called Baltimore home for a generation or more that are moving out to Randallstown and Owings Mills and Pikesville. They are the communities that are being completely robbed of their generational families. And they're understandably frustrated with the lack of a solution on the crime. The schools are so much worse in those neighborhoods than they are out in the county, and they're paying twice as much in property taxes for that privilege. That is never going to be a winning proposition, and you've got to address each and every one of those problems if you're going to try to stem this tide of population loss.
Rents are staggering. The median asking rent in this metropolitan area is just under $2,000 a month. How can working class people make Baltimore home?
It's a great question, and it links to your prior question, because the reality is that the people that are leaving Baltimore City for Baltimore County are actually leaving because they are able to pay the rents in Baltimore County, and they're willing to basically get comparable rents in the county but for better schools, lower crime, and lower taxes. So we have to create more affordable housing stock. Right now, developers are the ones that win. When you see the deals where TIFs and public subsidies are given out by my opponents, they're to waterfront property to make sure that luxury condos can be built in Port Covington or Harbor East or at the Inner Harbor. There is very little discussion of the kinds of programs that we would need to generate affordable public housing. And that's partly because the people that we want to make that available for are leaving the city for a better option in the county. The people that are moving into the city are the more affluent, the more privileged neighbors that can afford these high rents. So what you've got to do is both make the situation viable for the people living in Edmondson Village and Cherry Hill, because right now they can pay the same. They're able to pay what they're able to pay in Edmondson Village, but they can pay the same for better in Owings Mills or Pikesville. You've got to stabilize those neighborhoods and at the same time stop giving handouts to big developers for luxury apartments downtown and start focusing on creating affordable housing for the people that we want to keep in our city.
What do you see as the future of the formerly failed Red Line light rail project? What would you do about that as a mayor?
Look, the Red Line is a really important investment, but we also have to acknowledge it's a 10 or 15 year away investment. One of the things that I've pledged to do is create free buses citywide within 5 years, starting in the first 60 days with two free circular routes that go west to east. We have free buses, right? You can get from the nice parts of North Baltimore to the nice parts of South Baltimore on the circulator for free. But if you want to get from Edmondson, I mentioned before, to downtown, to the hospital, and back home for dinner, you got to pay $2 each way, $4.60 for a day pass. That's outrageous. Within the first 60 days, I'm going to create two free bus routes, one that goes Edmondson to Franklin Street to Orleans to Pulaski Highway, the other one that goes Park Heights to North Avenue and then up Harford Road. Those two west-east arteries are meant to be the backbone of what will ultimately become the Red Line. We start in the first 60 days with free buses. We start generating free public thoroughfares where cars are excluded and we start really committing themselves to free buses, pedestrians, cyclists. And then ultimately that becomes the backbone of the Red Line. It's an important investment. I believe in it. I support it. But it's not going to get here tomorrow. And in the meantime, we have to start investing in the kind of public transit options that we can deliver tomorrow.
You've given me a few hints of the things you would do once you got in office, but what would Baltimore citizens see differently after the first year of your administration?
Lisa, I want everything to be different. I want by that first summer of 2025, families to be looking forward to entering their high schools knowing that heat and air conditioning have been installed and rehabilitated and renovated at each one of those facilities where for years we have languished with buildings that don't have those facilities solved. I want those kids to know that college and trade school is going to be free if they stick around our public school system. I want them to know that carjackings and killings have plummeted, not because of a national trend, but because of very specific initiatives that we have taken to drive down gun violence, to drive down violent crime, to address juvenile crime that where juveniles are committing violent crimes. I want people to see the skeleton of a public transit grid that is equitable and free and accessible for all. I want them to know that we've broken the contract with Wheelabrator and shut down the incinerator. I want them to know that we have pledged a new era of transparency, that we've done forensic audits of each and every agency. There's a lot to do in this city, and I am impatient.
We need to take a quick break in our conversation with Democratic mayoral hopeful Dhruv Bignaraja. When we're back, we'll ask about rebuilding after the Key Bridge collapse and schools. I'm Lisa Snowden, in for Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
I'm Al Waller.
I'm Catherine Collinson.
And I'm Mihaela Vince.
In upcoming episodes of Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life, we'll discuss ways to catch up on retirement savings and the importance of self-care. Tune in to WYPR's website and mobile app, all major podcast platforms, and transamericainstitute.org.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Lisa Snowden. Today, we're continuing our conversations with some of the primary election candidates prior to early voting, which starts this Thursday. I'm talking to Dhruv Vigniraja about his second attempt for a shot at the seat to become mayor of Baltimore City. Schools. The state is spending $1.1 billion on Baltimore City schools next year, and the blueprint for Maryland's future demands the city spend an extra $79 million for schools. Where do you think the money would or should come from?
There's no question that we have to put our money where our mouth is. We talk about education being a critical investment, and then each year we find a reason not to deliver what we need to deliver. Look, we spent $66 million on police overtime in the last 18 months. We spend hundreds of million dollars in lots of agencies. We give hundreds of millions of dollars away to developers. The ARPA fund, $641 million, we gave $45 million in the first round, another $20 million, I think, in a second round to nonprofits. It's not as though we don't have $50 or $75 or $100 million in a city that has $3.5 or $4 billion of budget every year. The reality is that we choose to put that money into police overtime or into our favorite nonprofits or into Lexington Market, where our donor developers gave us donations during the last campaign. I don't think the question we should be asking is, where does the money come from? Because there are places. What I think we should be focusing on is, where is that money going to be spent? I do worry that that money is not being spent in the most transparent and productive way. We need a lot of money. We've got some of the hardest to educate cohort of kids in America. So many of the families that can choose to move to the county or choose to send their kids to private schools are doing so. So if you're not in the area of Hampstead Hill Elementary, if your kid didn't get into City, Poly, or Baltimore School for the Arts, you're thinking about moving out to Owings Mills and pulling your kids out of public schools, which makes it even harder to have the kind of composite classes that we need. But I want to know that that money is going for universal pre-K for every 3- and 4-year-old with guaranteed door-to-door transit for those children like Cristo Rey does on the east side. I want to know that we're guaranteeing free college or trade school for every graduate of Baltimore City Public School at any institution in the state of Maryland. So if you get in from Dunbar or Douglas to Lincoln Tech or Bowie State or UMBC or Johns Hopkins, finances is not a barrier. And if you ask me how much that is, I will tell you that it is a nickel compared to what we are spending on public education. The estimate is about $10 million. 1,000 kids is what we send to higher education of any kind right now, and it's about $10,000 a kid. That is a modest investment, but if we're going to ask the taxpayers to put more money, they are entitled to know where that money is going.
As mayor, you'll lead the city, but there has been criticism of your management style. In June 2022, the Baltimore Sun reported that attorneys working under you said that you were, quote, a controlling and unreasonably demanding boss, one who would surround himself with young lawyers and press them to work all night and take his phone calls after hours. Now, 2 years later, what's your response to that claim?
Yeah, look, it's a fair question. It's a good question, and it deserves an answer, sometimes more than you can give in a short answer in a radio interview. But let me start here. 10 years ago, I was Deputy Attorney General for the state of Maryland. I was a demanding boss. I had high expectations. I pushed people as hard as I thought they needed to be pushed. But I was also a young manager. I had a lot to learn about how to motivate and lead people. Candidly, it was a difficult time for me personally. I was one of those people that thought successful people didn't have to wrestle with their demons, didn't benefit from counseling. I couldn't have been more wrong. And through professional development and personal counseling, I think I am in a much better place. I'm a much better friend. I'm a much better mentor. I'm a much better manager. I'm a much better leader than I was 10 years ago. A mentor of mine said, when some of these stories came out, he shared with me a piece of scripture. I was raised in the Hindu tradition, but it was words of scripture that provided me some strength. It said, in crushing misfortune, be patient, for in fire gold is tested, and worthy men in the crucible of humiliation. I didn't know exactly what it meant at the time, but I have come to believe it means that if you want to do something important, you have to sometimes be humbled. You have to be humiliated. You have to be brought down to your knees and dust yourself off and pick yourself back up and decide who you are and who you want to be. It's been a journey. I'm not done yet. I think about it and work on it every day, but I would like to believe, and I think the people who have worked with me in the last 5 years would tell you, that whatever truth there is to it, and I can't pretend there isn't truth to it, I said and did things I should not have said and done, and I regret it, that I am today better equipped to be a leader of this city. I am better able to take on the challenges that a mayor would face than I was a decade ago.
That's Tharuv Vignaraja on the record on WYPR. I'm Lisa Snowden. We're talking about his plans should he be elected as the next mayor of Baltimore City. Early voting begins this Thursday. The primary election is May 14th. The Key Bridge collapse has devastated several of Baltimore's communities and has upset hundreds of jobs. What is the first thing you would do to help restore and rebuild?
Number one, we have to develop a bipartisan coalition to convince Congress to deliver the money that Baltimore needs, that Baltimore deserves. I don't want the Key Bridge to become a political football in some national conversation. When Minneapolis was able to rebuild a bridge quickly that was a quarter of the length of the Key Bridge, they did it because there was a unanimous delivery of federal stimulus funds to that city and that state. We need that same consensus to be available to Baltimore. So the last thing I want to do is divide Congress on the question of whether the Key Bridge is a worthy investment. The second thing we need to do is to recognize that already, like vultures, Norfolk, the Port of New Jersey, other major eastern seaboard ports are competing for the deals that have been ours for decades. We have the westernmost deepwater port on the eastern seaboard. They can't compete with that, but they can compete when it comes to logistics, when it comes to subsidies. And right now, a lot of those contracts are going to those other competitor ports, and they're going to try to keep them. And so the top priority for the mayor has to be to send economic leaders into negotiations with those folks right now so they know we're going to be back and stronger and better than ever. I want our local universities creating top flight logistics programs so that they know that when we rebuild that bridge and we reopen that port in earnest, we're going to be at the cutting edge. I want some of that investment that's going to come to Baltimore to help rebuild the bridge to go towards creating a cutting edge next century system for that bridge and for port logistics. Those are the kinds of things that I think the mayor has to think about.
You'll be part of a mayoral forum later today. Folks can tune in to WYPR at 12 noon for pre-debate coverage. What makes you stand out from your opponents?
Look, I'm the only candidate that is using public financing. It's the first time it's available, but my opponents decided to stick with the old model and continue to take tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars from corporations, from PACs, from lobbyists. And I do think that changes the kinds of policies. You don't hear anyone else talking about free buses citywide. You don't hear anyone else talking about free college and trade schools for graduates of Baltimore City Public Schools at any institution in the state of Maryland. You don't hear anyone else saying they're going to block the construction of luxury apartments that are going to cost $3,000 a month on the promenade. You don't hear anybody else talking about shutting down the incinerator or making environmental pledges that will allow Baltimore to be at the cutting edge of the green economy. And those are all because we have candidates that are comfortable with the models that have gotten them there. The last time we elected as mayor someone who didn't hold elected office, it was 1945. It was a long time ago, Second World War. But the folks that typically run from the outside, they run, they lose, and they retreat. We've had good ones. Mary Miller, Elizabeth Embry, David Warnock, T.J. Smith all took their shot, but when they lost, they retreated into their private lives. I understand that. It's hard to dust yourself off and come back into the buzzsaw of Baltimore politics. But we are here because we know this tree will not fall with a single axe swipe. You're going to have to chop at it over and over again. And as people in Baltimore know, I'm never going to stop fighting. I'm never going to quit.
Thanks, Tharuv.
Thank you so much.
Tharuv Vignaraja is running for the second time to be mayor of Baltimore City. The primary election day is May 14th. Early voting begins this Thursday, May 2nd. We have a link to voter registration and election information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. At noon today, you can tune into Midday for a mayoral forum that will include Vignaraja, as well as Sheila Dixon, Bob Wallace, and Mayor Brandon Scott. I'm Lisa Snowden, editor-in-chief of Baltimore Beat, in for Sheila Cast. Glad you're with us on the record. Come back tomorrow.